I read the mission statement of the Tappan National Development Corporation, and it said creating industry from a way of life. Now this sounds great. It sounds like, you know, industry in the area should only be able to move forward if it respects the Tappan way of life, right?
Well, you know, talking about way of life, I couldn't see how it's tying in with our way of life. I mean, we have to face it now. Our way of life is based on a capitalist model, right?
Yeah.
So in a sense, it's, you know, it is our new way of life. One of the things that he talks about is he says mining has reduced our unemployment rate to 6%.
Yeah.
We have one mine on our territory, and it's reduced our unemployment rate to 6%, which is below the national average. And the elders are saying, we're not saying no to development. We're not anti-development. We're saying we want controlled sustainability, meaning we want each one of these projects, if it's feasible, you know, and it's not going to impact our environment too much, mm-hmm. we want each of them to be developed in sequence so we could perhaps sustain it. You know, it's a non-sustainable resource. Mining is a non-sustainable resource, so it's an oxymoron to say sustainable mining.
Mm-hmm.
But what we want to do is we want to control it in a sustainable manner, meaning we want each development done in sequence
yeah.
so it could perhaps, you know, secure our economy for the next 7 generations or 200 years. And if, you know, and if these mines are not, you know, are going to impact our environment, say, for instance, Shell Canada is moving into the sacred headwaters of the Skeena, the Nass, the Bellerven, the Stikine, through the Spotsizi, and the Iskut. I mean, here's this major toxic development is going to be ahead of all these waterways. And on the Skeena, is occupied on the lower end of the Skeena. It's occupied by the Tsimshian Nation.
Mm-hmm.
The upper Skeena is occupied by the Gitxsan Nation. And these people still, you know, sustenance fishing is still a major part of their economy.
Yeah.
So, you know, if anything should go wrong, and even if it doesn't go wrong, the impact is going to be affecting two other nations. The Shell Canada development is also ahead of the Nass River. And, you know, the Nass, the Nishka, you know, sustenance fishing is still, a major part of their economy as well. So, you know, the impact of this is it goes beyond the Tahltan borders, right? Not to mention the Stikine River is, you know, the Tahltan still use the Stikine River for sustenance fishing as well. And the Stikine River is an international waterway. It goes from Canada into the United States. So here's all this happening, and, you know, it's not working. Well, what did he say again about from a way of life? I mean, it's not creating industry from a way of life. I mean, one of the things that's so harsh for a lot of the people to accept is the fact that here we are, the resources are ours.
Yeah.
We've never ceded our land. We've never signed treaties. In our declaration stated in the first stipulation, we claim the sovereign rights to all the country of our tribe. And yet, a lot of our workers, a lot of our people are forced, you know, to work in these mines at the lower end of the economic scale, right? Like right at the very end of the, in the labor positions, right? So they come out of there and they don't like it. It's unfortunate. We must participate in it because we've changed to a capitalist system.
You told me the other day that the Tahltan Nation has a long history of extraction and trade in, I think you said it was called obsidian, the volcanic glass?
Obsidian. We had trade in obsidian.
Okay.
Before contact with Europeans, we were mining our resources. We were taking the obsidian, turning them into projectile points and, you know, manufacturing them. We had what was called the Ice Mountain Tradition. That's how it's designated by archaeologists. And we traded our obsidian far and wide, you know, Canada and into the United States, eh? And this was our economy. So we do have experience in resource development, but we did it on a sustainable basis.
That seems like the major difference there. And I just want to clarify the Shell projects. It's oil?
It's coal bed methane. So that's happening. And Shell is in Tahltan territory now. They're meeting with the Tahltan Indian Act leaders as we speak. They're well, not as we speak, but I'm sure they're here this week. I know for a fact they're here this week. So they're meeting. Jerry Asp was actually in Calgary, Alberta, meeting on behalf of the nation with Shell Canada when the sit-in began in Telegraph Creek. He was meeting on our behalf when the sit-in began, and then he comes back and he he tries to write off the sit-in as, you know, just elders being exploited by environmentalists and feminists and agitators from other tribes, you know. And
yeah, I read that in the Vancouver Sun today. That's just incredible to me that he could be so condescending to assume elders can't make decisions for themselves.
Yeah, he went so far as to say in one press release that the elders were being used as a bat to hit the leaders over the head with. I mean, you know, he didn't give them any credit. Any kind of intellectual credit, you know, as if they were robots. And that's real disrespectful, because our elders, they're our professors. They hold, you know, all the knowledge. You know, just because we switched over to some European imposed curriculum, our elders are, you know, being marginalized. All the information that they have are being lost because of this, you know, imposed European value that's brought in through the Indian Act. So, you know, and we want the elders. We've learned from the elders. I've lived with the elders. You know, I've done sustenance fishing. I've done trapping. I've taken. You know, I've participated in the traditional economy. You know, I went to university and got a degree later on in my life. But as a child, I participated in our traditional economy. You know, it was at least 50% traditional and 50% wage economy when I was a child. So, you know, it's only recently that the wage economy has become a major part of our lives now, but it doesn't mean that our sustenance economy doesn't exist no more. It's still there. As an anthropologist, you know, in hindsight, I look back at the band model government being imposed on us. I remember as a child, the government brought in the building. They set a building right in the center of our community, and it was just an empty building with a pool table inside of it, with one small little maybe 12, maybe 8x6 room, enough to put a desk inside. And inside this band office, it was empty. Inside the whole structure, it was empty. They had a pool table, and guess what? All the men started to go and play pool. And it was a switch from a matrilineal system to a patrilineal leadership. So the men would go play pool, the chief would be amongst them, and then all of a sudden I noticed there was a desk, because the young boys used to go over and hang out and watch the men play pool. Until we got bored, then we wandered off. But I noticed in this building there was an empty small little room that had enough for a desk. And all of a sudden, I noticed there was a desk there. Then pretty soon there was, well, it went as far as a desk. And then we used to have the movie night there as well. It never, ever took off. And the next thing you know, they built another structure and they put a desk in there with a radio phone. And then pretty soon, you know, they had two pool tables put in there, and all the men gathered. Yeah. And then pretty soon the office started to pick up files. And next thing you know, we had an office, and pretty soon it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally this imposed Indian band model just took over.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty covert operation, you know, here in the East with the Kanukahage Nation, the Mohawk Nation. You know, they had people getting killed and jailed and all that kind of stuff when they tried to maintain their traditional system. But
You know, one of my uncles said it, he put it in a real beautiful way. He says, you know what? He says, they took our territory without firing one shot.
Yeah.
They took our mines first through residential school.
Yeah.
You know, he says, and then they took our territory without firing a shot. But, you know, one of the things that really contributed to our demise was the European epidemic, see? So that wiped us out, and we were kind of, we were a strong nation at one time, but the epidemic kind of took care of that. And then they slowly moved in through the 70s.
Yeah.
And then they brought television in the early 80s, eh? Okay. Television is a major, major, major media, how do you put it, it really influenced the change, right?
So
watching television, pretty soon we wanted to adopt this culture. But it doesn't mean that we have to give up our traditional ways. I mean, tradition doesn't mean we want to go back to bow and arrows. It means we want to maintain our values and our principles. You know, we could participate in capitalism, but still maintain our environment and still protect our rivers. You know, and we'll find a way. But they refuse to hear the elders. They refused to listen to the elders. The elders have been called ridiculous. When I was standing there when Jerry Ansp was presented with this document, he was saying, this is ridiculous. This is foolish. You know,
What was the document?
The document was demanding his resignation. I was a photographer there, and I was taking the pictures, and there was also someone on a video camera, but he was saying it was ridiculous and foolish.
So has that been the main demand, his resignation?
Yeah,
Are there other demands as well?
Well, yeah, like the first time they had, when he first showed up at the office, at the sit-in, they just handed him his walking papers, and he was saying, this is foolish, you know. This is ridiculous and going on, you know, like as if these leaders, these elders were foolish, you know, and they were just saying, hey, there's a major conflict of interest in your, you know, in our leadership.
Yeah.
You're the vice president for CAMA. You're the chief operations director for Tealtan Nation Development Corporation,
yeah.
And you're the Tealtan chief. You know, there's a conflict. You're making decisions on the nation, for the nation, based on your interest in these two other areas. So therefore, we want you to relinquish your position as a chief.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
Yeah.
You know, but he couldn't release his position because that position guarantees, you know, the security of his interest in these other areas.
Because I read as well that there is a demand for a financial audit.
There was a demand for a financial audit, and I've heard from pretty good sources, from the elders. They were saying that the Tealtan Nation Board of Directors have requested a forensic audit of the Tealtan Nation Development Corporation, and I'm not sure what's become of that, if it's still ongoing, but that's happened. And so that's either happening, it's happened, or it's done, and we don't know the results yet.
What are the elders and others in support of the occupation, what are they proposing? If Chief Jerry Asp did resign, what would they propose for the future?
Well, they propose leadership that would work with the people.
Okay.
Leadership that would consult and communicate with the people and have the people participate fully, you know, in the decisions on our resources. And There's also people talking, elders talking, that they want to clean. They said they need a major house cleaning, meaning
mm-hmm.
all the nepotism and the family members that are occupying all the administrative positions and leadership roles in our nation to step down and be reassembled, you know,
reassemble
a whole new government based on appointed leadership. So therefore, if you're not doing your job, you're removed, you know, until we find people who would govern our nation under traditional laws and rules and values. So those are the demands. I mean, it just sounds like a big demand, but when you grow up traditionally on the land, it's a small demand. It's just saying, hey,
let's live
honestly.
Drag lines at my heart, they're tearing us apart, and the mountainside where we were born. Must I weep and mourn for the land that took 10 million years to form? Now all my eyes can see are just the bleeding scars across the mountainside, across the mountainside. Our neighbors down the road, they farmed 12 acres, worked a heavy load, poor as dirt, though they tried, till the coal company came through, said, we'll mine your land, take the burden off of you, and we'll see that you get by. Drag lines at my heart, they're tearing us apart, and the mountainside where we were born. Must I weep and mourn for the land that took 10 million years to form? Now all my eyes can see are just the bleeding scars across the mountainside, across the mountainside. First they tore down their home where the grandma and all the kids were born. They just brushed it all aside. Then came the big machines, ripped up the trees and muddied all the streams while the family stood and cried. Drag lines at my heart, they're tearing us apart, and the mountainside where we were born. Take warning that the storm clouds will come and block out the sun that shines upon the folks who seek their fortunes off the families who have died trying to survive across the mountainside.